March 31st, 2021, it's the Walk for Pedro Show. Thank you. Show. Happy Wednesday. It's the last day of March. Well, Steve Billings D-Day. We started off with the original untitled ballad to Her Ladyship, in parentheses, has got John Coltrane. Kill Sonic after that with Liberation Technology. Brother Matt, the Love God, on the Pleasure Point a couple miles south of here because we're still great quarantino mode. But I'm not totally man alone, people, because those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, I got Eddie Rivas with this. Welcome aboard, Eddie.
Thank you. Right on. That LibTech tune actually is a Bobby Bradford tune, I think.
Oh, it's a cover.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, I've seen him a few times. I think he, Nels Klein.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he was in some of Charlie Hayden's Liberation orchestras.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I saw him with, I think it was with Vinnie Golia once.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I think I saw, you know, our friend Vince Maroney, I saw him play with Bobby somewhere, too. I can't remember where that was.
Vince was in the pair of pliers with Tom Watson and myself.
Yeah, I saw that band quite a bit.
That was like 20-something years ago.
Yeah,
Vince was a great cat, and he's come on and recorded. We made a record a year ago with a guy from Wales named Jamie called the Wish Granters.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And he's played some sax on Sock Tight and shit, and he's a great cat.
Love yeah, he's actually my saxophone teacher.
Okay, yeah. He can blow the sax, the flute, and on the harp, harmonica.
Yeah.
And he also is a great drummer, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Very talented guy. Let's get into your journey through music. What's your earliest musical recollection, please?
Well, my grandma's, going to my grandma's and listening to a lot of music, actually. And her name was Angelina, but we called her Nana Mica, which was short for Musica, which is music in Spanish. So she was known as, like, Grandma Music. So she had, you know, a lot of, you know, Mexican music, like the trios and the ballads and a bit of mariachi. So that's, I think, where I first was really exposed to, like, music being a very present thing, you know.
Now, you're talking about records, or they're fucking people playing in the pad?
No, records and 8-tracks. Okay. I remember she had 8-tracks, too. But, yeah, records and 8-tracks. I have some of her records now.
But so, and where was this, Eddie?
This was right here in East L.A. So I grew up in East Los Angeles, and my grandma, fortunately, lived right around the block from us. So I could just walk over to her house anytime.
So, but in the pad where you grew up, was there musical instruments?
Yeah, sort of. At a certain point, My grandma, when I was really little, there's a picture of on my dad's lap where I'm playing the guitar. She gave me a guitar at some point, maybe when I was maybe 3 or 4 years old. And obviously I didn't know what to do with it, but I would strum it and pretend to sing, I guess, you know. So there was a guitar lying around. Eventually my little brother and I got in a fight and he broke it.
Damn.
Yeah, so who knows how that would have improved my chops.
Well, what about school? Were you in the choir, the marching band or shit like that?
Yeah. Well, so the school I went to, the elementary school, we had a music teacher, Miss Bridenthal, I remember. And my mother had played violin when she was a little girl. So I remember thinking, well, I'll play violin. But it wasn't too great of an experience because I think she was older. And so the only thing I remember about that class was the first day I showed up with my violin, she had us get in line, like a single file line, and then the kids would walk up to the music stand and play the music. Well, I'd never seen sheet music before. I didn't even know how to hold the violin. So she had me get in line and go up there, and I had no idea what to do. And so it was a pretty actually negative experience because I was embarrassed, and, you know, that didn't go over too well, even though I still kept going and eventually just kind of on my own started to figure out what the notes were and where to put my fingers. Like, it started to make a little bit of sense to me, but it wasn't the best experience.
What grade?
That would have been fourth grade. I was probably about 9 years old then.
9 or 10. Yeah, wow, a lot of trauma. You know, she's called up. A teacher, right? she's going to teach anything.
I don't know if she was overwhelmed or just... I'm sure her heart was always in the right place because other kids were playing just fine. But I don't know if maybe I entered the class late in the school year or what happened there. But it was a pretty messed up thing.
Well, you can relate, right? Because you're a teacher.
What's that?
You can relate.
Oh, yeah, I'm totally aware of not doing that to my students. Yeah,
So you gotta thank her. You remember her name?
Yeah, kid. I mean, that could have really, And again, I don't know where her head was, but it could have ruined music for me, really. You know.
Sure, like big turnoff.
Yeah, totally.
I had a lot of people on the show with the piano lesson nightmare. Yeah,
totally. Yeah.
So where do you go music? Well, let me ask you this, Eddie.
Yeah,
what was the first record you bought with your own money?
It was, I think, Led Zeppelin In Through the Outdoor.
And what was the first gig you went and saw?
Well, besides the backyard gigs locally, we went to see the Dickies and the Vandals at the Country Club, like maybe in 85, 86, something like that.
In the Val. Country Club was in the Val.
Yeah, it was a trek for us. And
kind of west side,
Yeah, I had older cousins. You know, I didn't have older brothers, but I had an older cousin, my cousin Dave, who actually played with me in Leopold. And you know, we had a group of friends, and somehow, I don't even remember who took us to the gig, but by that point, I had gotten kind of exposed through skateboarding. You know, through skateboarding, we got into punk rock.
Okay. I think Van Nuys, Reseda is where that pad was.
Yeah, Reseda, you're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Perfect. I don't know what it is now. I wonder what happened to that place.
God, that was years ago. Right?
Yeah. I think they filmed Boogie Nights there.
Okay. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, that first scene.
Because the Valley is supposed was like the porn place, right?
Yeah, it was right back in the day. I wonder if it still is.
Maybe it still is, yeah. Okay, back to your journey in music.
Sure.
So, violin only for a little bit.
Yeah, just a tad.
And then you're talking about skateboarding was like the gateway drug to the punk scene. And that means start your own band, right? The afternoon, after school, the garage, basement, bedroom band.
Yeah, totally. Well, my mom was a teacher, so I remember I asked for drums, and they were like, no way, no drums. But then I remember hearing, again, Led Zeppelin, the song remains the same soundtrack where Jimmy Page plays the theremin, remember? And I thought that was a guitar, so I thought, well, that thing sounds cool. I want to do that. And so I said, well, can I get a guitar? And this was maybe when I was just about to turn 15. And so she said, well, take a guitar class, like there was at my middle school. And I did with Miss Rector. I remember her. And she taught us really good fundamentals. So I got an A in the class. My parents got me like $100 kind of cheapy guitar from the mall. And that's when I think, like, you know, after you learn your chords, you start, you know, jamming with your friends and stuff. So that was when I was about 15, my first band. We were called the Grubby Jims. And, yeah, like most kids, we would first we would rehearse at my aunt's house or practice at my aunt's house. And then she got sick of that. So we moved into my folks' garage, and we kept, you know, playing in that garage for a good 2.5 years, and never a complaint from the neighbors or the cops. It was, I mean, in fact, when we stopped playing, the neighbors asked me, what happened? We used to water the lawn and listen to you guys. And I was like, now, oh, my God.
I'm in, yeah, very, very kind people. I'm interested in, were you copying off records, or were you trying to write your own material?
No, we kind of, once I figured out a couple things, like my friends taught me like little Metallica riffs and stuff that I was in school with, and I figured out like, okay, I can play this thing to some point. I didn't learn, and to this day I haven't learned a lot of covers. I mean, when I played with friends' bands, I've learned their stuff too, and Distorted Pony, I had to learn that stuff. But, you know, at that age, it was just like we're writing our own songs, and we just kind of right away got off. Got on to that point where it was just like, okay, let's, you know, write songs. And we would just kind of, my cousin and I, especially Dave, would sit around together and figure out this tune and then show it to our drummer and then, you know, have the singer, put lyrics to it, or we'd even have lyric ideas or start on the lyrics. But we pretty much right away started, we did do two covers in that band. We did a Angry Samoans cover, we did Todd Killings, and we did an aggression cover called Body Count. So we did do those two covers.
Remember those guys? Yeah. I think they were Nardcore?
Nardcore, yeah, there you go. Yeah. Okay, maybe. We had that 7-inch, that Doug Moody.
Right,
Super 7-inch. Yeah.
Mystic Records, yeah. George Hurley. Georgie played with Hey Taxi. I think that was the very first Mystic Records 7-inch.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
can you remember the first song you wrote?
I think it was a song called Two Faces or Two Face, something like that. I think that was the first song we wrote together, my cousin and I. Yeah.
All right. Cousin Dave, right?
My cousin Dave,
okay,
yeah.
Okay. I want to play here some more Killsonic, Wet Tape.
Right on, cool. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Pedro show, that chunk of music started with Killsonic doing Wet Tail. Then Dustin Wong, he's got a brand new record called Internal Hot Springs. Great. Just came out this week. Mere Man, Real Con, name of that tune. And love it. Mr. Tom out of Pittsburgh with the new album, New Tobacco. Room with HBO. Balmas Prendon, some new stuff found in their archive, and that's been let loose on us. Abandoned Stunt Woman. And then Hans Rotten out of Switzerland with a Blossom. Network Glass out of Baltimore with OCVBS. I love this stuff. Out of Chicago is Snez. Going under the name Azia. Oh, yeah, Snez Adage. That's why. And Class War, but it ain't the Dills. Same title, but you can't copyright a title, people. And finally, Distorted Pony, which you heard Eddie mention. God's List. So how long does this band last? Just a couple of years?
Which band? The high school band?
Yeah, with your cousin Dave.
Yeah, about 2.5 years.
What are they called, the Jimmies?
The Grubby Jims.
The Grubby Jims. Now, do you remember the first Grubby Jim gig?
I do. It was at a place called the Dust Bowl, which was a backyard in a house, over here in Boyle Heights, in the Boyle Heights City Terrace area.
Sure.
And what I remember about that set is someone banged into me, and my guitar went out of tune, and I was having trouble tuning it because I didn't have a tuner. So this guy, this long-haired stoner dude, said, "Let me tune it for you." And then he tuned it to some drop C or I don't know what the hell he did. So then I had to play a couple songs like that, which sounded insane. But then we finished playing our set, and some kids came up to us and said, just play it again. So we played our whole set twice.
That's bitchy.
It's so, those memories are so fun. Because, can you imagine, doing that, in a club gig or something? Well, play your set. But those, kind of backyard gigs were really fun, I really missed those, actually.
Sure. And now, later you're going to get the recording. Do any recording then with the...
Well, Grubby Jims, we did record a demo. I don't even have a copy of that anymore. I think our drummer might have some of that stuff somewhere.
What was it, a 4-track cassette or something?
It was actually, because I found the studio and I called them, and it would have been 16-track half-inch tape.
Wow.
Cast cameras. Yeah. Our friends in another band called Antisocial had recorded with this guy and gave us his number, and then we went to his studio, and it was the first time I'd been, I was working at McDonald's. And so some of my McDonald's money went into paying for that recording.
That's bitching. You should have a copy of that,
I know. Yeah, that's the first stuff. Yeah, and I know somewhere he has a copy, but I left the band, that was towards the end of high school. So I left the band right before starting college. And so we never got actually a full mix. We only had a rough mix of it. So we were supposed to finish it. And then things just kind of got, left behind.
That happens. It happens.
Yeah.
But anyway, you go to college and music ain't your focus, right?
No. Actually, I started as a history major and then graduated as a fine art major. But very well, it was weird because I thought, you go to college and then, I knew I was going to teach. So I thought, I'll kind of do what we do, right? We, graduate and get to work and maybe start a family and all that. But then I got really into I don't know what you call the kind of 90s post-punk, the noise rock bands, Jesus Lizard, Melvins, going to Jabberjaw, that sort of blew open my world, because up until then, with the exception of maybe you guys, the SST bands, Black Flag, Minutemen, Sonic Youth. I hadn't heard kind of the other stuff coming out of Touch and Go, AMRAP, eventually Trans Syndicate, Sub Pop. But once we heard that stuff, it blew my mind. So then it was full on music. I went finished school and everything, but music kind of took over a lot more.
Can I ask you, Eddie, because I'm realizing now, Joe Vex had three different or four different Vex clubs in East LA.
Yeah.
Did you go to any of that scene?
Not until he did the way later ones over in El Sereno, where Evens played there.
Yeah, I remember that.
But not the early ones. I've seen the buildings.
Yeah.
But no, it was a little before my time.
Yeah, because Minutemen played for Joe a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And some good gigs. And also there was a great, you were saying, SST bands, Stains.
Oh, yeah.
Robert and Louie and fucking Caesar and great cats.
Justin Fitz. I heard about those guys a little later, but yeah, they definitely were kind of a mythological band, because you couldn't find their records anymore. Right. So it was one of those, the Stains, but nobody, again, being a little younger, I hadn't heard that stuff.
Yeah, you were saying more 90s.
Yeah.
And actually, before them, though, and Robert, I think, did one gig, Nervous Gender had some cats.
Oh, yeah, no.
Like Gerardo, the main singer guy, was...
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was... Yeah, people... It's trippy how in those days things changed really quick.
Yeah.
And so it got lost.
Yeah, yeah. There's no kind of, I mean, now at least, you know, you have access to things. But there was, you know, and it's weird. There was this East LA kind of, or a backyard documentary put out on, I don't know if it was Hulu or Netflix or something. And it kind of made it sound like there was nothing going on in East LA for years. It was like, no, we were playing backyard shows all the time.
Yeah,
you know?
So yeah.
It's interesting how there's this, the internet is kind of almost rewriting history.
Yeah, and little revisionism. Right, you know? Yeah, humans do that. It's not just internet. It's called revisionism.
Well,
people who weren't there get to just make it up and shit. But you know, there was even New Wave. There was Los Amigos and The Brat. And there was all kinds of stuff.
Those are, again, all bands that, you'd kind of, again, they're like this, the mythology of them. You'd hear that they were bands on East Side, but I'd never heard their music till way, way later, you know.
So you're going to these gigs, eh? And you ain't played since you played with your cousin. Do you want to start making another band, right?
Well, yeah. I was in a really short-lived band with a few friends for like less than a year that didn't kind of do anything. But then what happened was I made friends with, well, Distorted Pony, Sandy Duncan's Eye, Babyland, Slug, all these bands that were kind of doing weirder, noisy, kind of, you know, just something different to my ears that I hadn't heard. And so I was like, yeah, I want to start playing again because I wanted to play gigs with those bands. But by the time we formed Leopold and got up and running, those bands had already gone by, because that was '96 we started Leopold. And, so those bands had already dissipated by then, you know. Excuse me. But fortunately, you know, I we stayed in touch with most of those bands. Actually, I still stay in touch with. And then we were kind of, I guess, the next generation of that, like us, 400 Blows.
I was going to say, Ferdy and.
Scott, right?
Scott, yeah, right.
Yeah, Christian, those guys. So we were kind of like this next
first,
wave.
And then they got it. Christian actually was Pedro.
Oh, yeah, I remember Rig, totally, yeah.
Yeah, Rig, right, yeah. With Craig Ibarra.
Craig, exactly. I'm still buddies with Craig, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know what? People ask me about the old days, and I say it was about people. And same with the new days. It's always going to be about people.
Totally, yeah, of course. I mean, I remember, you know, meeting those guys, like you're saying, you know, Christian and Craig back when they were in Rig, and you know, and in fact, Leopold played with them before they broke up. So we had known them for a long time, and I still stay in touch with. In fact, let me kind of just segue here. The label I have is probably going to reissue the first 400 Blows album that we put out, and I just talked to Scott about 2 days ago about, you know, working on that. So I still stay in touch with a lot of those people.
That's great. That's great. You know, because some of those connects are forever.
Yeah, totally, totally,
you
right.
You know, and it's not a burden. It's a fucking good
thing. No, not at all. Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, you know, that is, like, I'm 47, and I do, especially now I'm friends with some of my students that I taught when they were kids. And so it's interesting to have them ask me about bands that I used to, like, when I'd ask people that saw, you know, like, you know, Black Flag or, you know, you guys, Minutemen and stuff. And now I have people asking me about Fugazi and, you know. So now I'm the
it's
guy.
It's your turn, Eddie.
Yeah, yeah, which is really bizarre, you know.
Yeah, but that's the way life is. It's about taking turns. We're at the end of the first hour, March 31st, 2021. This What Pedro Show special guest, Eddie Rivas. Hold tight for hour two. March 31st, 2021. Second hour of the What Pedro Show.
computer tell me of the mythical dimensions of the cuckoo? Computer tell me, in this situation, what would you do? What route would you take? The most alliterative, absolutely, I agree. And how much is at stake? Computer, tell me of the obstacles confronting early man. And late woman, computer, tell me of the mysteries residing in computer, tell me. In this set of circumstances, just how to proceed? And can you tell me? Is there any substance to this reality? And which path will you pick? Is this the hill you're gonna die on, do you think? And how much will it take?
I'm crazy reading. You know, overthink. I wish you could have seen me. Your words have seen me down the track. Try to make them now. Try to make them sound a little bit. Try to make them now. Let's try to make them now.
Walk for Pedro show. We start off the second hour with Distorted Pony doing Death in the Turnstile, something live. Then Ben Salter out of Tasmania, Computer Tell Me, Lucas Sabella out of Sydney, Corvette, Freight Train, live at the 5 o'clock lounge from Duo Decibel System in Cleveland. Also Cleveland, Death of Samantha with Save Your City. Sigoti, three Italian guys, and Tolum from Pacifica with Thousands Killed Again Today, Master. And finally, a Distorted Pony. Is the song called Crisis and it was a demo, or is the title Crisis Demo?
Yeah, no, the song is called Crisis, and that's just a demo.
Because I thought that would be a great name for a song, is like Crisis Demo.
Maybe we'll keep that,
You know, like getting ready for the fucking...
Yeah, just practicing for the crisis.
So look, Distorted Pony, this ain't your band. This is guys you joined to help, right?
Exactly. So, like I was saying, back in like the early 90s, I think I saw them in 91 the first time, but they've been a band since... What was it, 80, about, I think, 86 to 93. And so we became friends. I stayed in touch with them. They decided to get back together around 2009. And one of the guitar players wasn't interested. And so, of course, I threw my hat in the ring and said, hey, if you guys need a guitar player. And sure enough, you know, they asked me to join. And we played some shows then. And then we were kind of dormant. But in 2018, we got asked to go to Europe. So we did about a two week, I think we did 14 gigs in 16 days, something like that, in 2018. And that's where that recording comes from. At the Hamburg gig, some guy, hit us up to, you know, if he could record the show, and he did. And then I put it up on our Facebook, and then, Improved Sequenced asked if they could, put it out on vinyl. So, of course, you know, we said, sure, if you guys want to do it. So that we should...
Well, it's a good record, I got to say that.
Yeah, for a boot, it's not bad, you know. And then also,
and
you know,
Improve,
it's kind of funny.
I got to connect with you with Improved Sequenced, right, out of Bologna. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
7-inch coming out with Sonia de Maynaio, and last year put out a... Something with MSSV.
Oh, got it.
Mike
Mignetta,
right.
Yeah, I mean, I went on their Bandcamp page the other day, and they have, I mean, a lot of stuff now coming out, so it's really cool. In fact, here's the funny thing. They actually, while I was talking to my partner, my friend Anthony Francoso, he plays in a band called Geronimo. We're the two guys that do Total Annihilation Records. I get an email from Giancarlo, I believe, from Improved Sequenced saying, hey, we'd be interested in reissuing the 400 Blows on vinyl. And I was like, dude, we were just talking about that. So now they're going to put out the European release, and we're going to put out the American release.
Gianluca. He also has a club in Bologna called Freakout.
Yeah, we played there. Yeah, great place, man.
Yeah, I've played there buttloads. It's always a good time. Always a good time.
Yeah, we had a great time.
Let me ask you, because you helped out these Distorted Pony guys, just to get things straight. But Leopold's No More by that point?
No, that band lasted about 10 years from 96 to 2007. But we did do some shows, and we, like I mentioned in the email, we played with you for Chris Stein's memorial shows, and we hadn't played together.
Dave Travis's pad, yeah.
Yeah, Cafe Nella. We hadn't played together in, I want to say, like 17 years or something like that, 15 years, something like that. But, you know.
Well, thanks for doing that. Chris Stein was a beautiful guy.
Yeah.
Only 48 fucking years old.
I know, man. I know. We were actually talking before he passed. He was in the hospital, and we were going back and forth on Facebook, and he was messaging me if I do a cover band with him so he could get his chops back. And I said, of course, you know, once you get out of this, you know, yeah, let's do it. So that's kind of the last conversation I had with him about getting a band together so he could kind of recuperate and get his chops back.
He gave me a little drawing, ink drawing he made of John Coltrane. I got it in my pad here. I look at it all the time.
Oh, right on. Yeah, I have his picture.
He made a Dosa video with his, you know, when he's taking care of those dogs, their son stuff. And yeah, it was really neat. Anyway, okay, so Leopold just, I guess, just ran a course, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And I want to play here another proj. And when we listen to this stuff, because you gave me a couple tunes, Eagle Plum. Mm-hmm. And this one's Sinaitis Insulitis.
Thank you.
for Pedro Show. That chunk of music started with Eagle Plum doing Sinaitis Insulitis. Then out of Barcelona, some bands, Betnizer with Talco y Bronza, Nielsen with Jungle of Disgrace, Mecánica Clásica with Arias, Opuestas. Fucking destroying your language. Sorry, people. Your music's beautiful. I love it. And then two, I don't even know how to say this. It's number two, then two Z's, and E and X. So, two Z's. And a tune called Detti. I think they're Italianos, huh? Or no. I think they're Spaniards, too. I guess the Buffalo and the Catalans. Ah, what? You fucking up. And it's flying out of Hokkaido. The question now, finally, Eagle Plum, Funeral Dirge. Yeah. And Eddie, enlighten us to this Eagle Plum.
Okay, so Ego and I are childhood friends. He grew up right down the street here, you know, East L.A. His mom still lives down the street. And he played in a punk band with his brother called Flesh World. And then my band, Leopold, would play with them every once in a while. But we had been friends since we were about 15. So, you know, we stayed in touch. Both our bands later, when he formed the Eagle Plum and the Ebola Orchestra, and Leopold were both rehearsing at Downtown Rehearsal. So I'd run into him all the time. And eventually,
is that the pad that's by the river? The bridge?
It's on the other side. It's on
7th
the west
Street
side.
Or something like that?
Yeah. 7th and Santa
Fe. It's on west side, right the LA River. Okay. I practiced. There's like a buttload of prac pads, right?
Yeah. Well, they're gone now. That whole place is gone. It's now some kind of...
Yeah, wow.
Artist lost. Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. That
shit changes.
Gone. Yeah, man.
So okay, go on.
I went into him, and right around the time I turned 30, I started taking saxophone lessons with Vince.
Yeah.
And I told him, hey, if you need a sax player, I need a band, you know? So he said, you know, I'm good for now, but yeah, I'll keep it in mind. So about 6 months later, he calls me up and says, hey, you know, our sax player's leaving. Do you think you can play the stuff? And so he sent me the sheet music, and I started shedding that stuff and joined that group. And we've technically never broken up, but he's a really busy guy. He's now doing music for SpongeBob, and he's done music for Disney, and that's his gig now. He's a composer for films and cartoons. And he still does, you know, smaller versions of a band, but that's kind of the only album we put out is called, it's called, The Rat King. And so, yeah, myself and, you know, Ernie, quite, the horn section was really fun. Sometimes there were up to four of us. And I really loved playing, you know, being a horn. I'm not much of a soloist, but I love being in a section, you know. The horns just sound so good together. So I really miss that sound.
And we got to hip the listeners to your teacher, Vince Maroney. Vince Maroney is a great music kid. He lives in Echo Park.
Totally.
Grew up in Garden Grove, I think. But El Grupo Sexo and shit was, and then he ends up in the pair of pliers with me and Tom Watson.
Yeah, and, yeah. Bazooka, you know, played in the Bell Rays for a minute when they went to Europe. I remember that. Yeah.
Last year recorded with him. I told you about that mm-hmm. record with the Welsh guy Jamie. But we also did something with Bucky from the Tar Babies called one was a Bucky tune and one was a Sun Ra.
Oh, yeah, he sent me that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Vince did really good, man.
Yeah, he's a great musician, man. Just a really, like, day-to-day working on it, practices all the time kind of guy. You know?
And he started recording himself and shit at home. He got a little thing going so he can...
yeah.
And Bob Lee's gotten into that. You know, this. I'm trying to encourage more and more musicians. Maybe you ain't going to have a full-blown studio or something, but the idea of being able to, like, trade files on the internet.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did some stuff for a project you guys worked on at my studio years ago. I can't remember what the project was, but he was like, hey, you know, I got this thing with Watt. And so he did some there, and then he's coming in to do some stuff in April for a day for another proj he has with the Fatso Jetson guys. And
Mario Lally.
Yeah, yeah.
Great cat.
The other day. Yeah, great
cat, man. Love those guys. Big respect to him. And his brother, the bass man, right?
Larry,
right. We're at the end of the second hour, March 31, 2021, edition of Watt Pedro Show. Special guest Eddie Rivas. Hold tight for hour three. March 31, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt Pedro Show. Swap for Pedro show started the third hour off with Leopold. This was Eddie's band way back. The Wreck of Hope.
Yeah, that's a painting.
And then we had Jacob Rose's Flag with choirs. Tommy Dahill out of Alaska with the 12 Mile Summit. Carnival Jones, the only one left. That's Crane up in Idaho. You the pimp. Finally, Leopold. Yes, my love. So, Total Annihilation. Your studio, Eddie.
Yeah.
What's the story?
So the story behind that is, well, you know, growing up, you know, with music, you know, you get a little curious about recording at some point. So I had always, you know, and I've always liked, like, the gadgets, you know, the mics and the gear and everything. But our drummer in Leopold, his name was George Sang. Actually, he worked on Engine Room. He helped engineer some Engine Room over at that studio in Burbank. He had gone to engineering school. And
was Rob Seaford, who was the main guy, but I think he assisted George.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I would go hang out with him at the studio and just liked being around, you know, learning whatever I could from him. And then when he left the band, we got another drummer, Chris, but then I kind of took over a little bit, you know, on four-track cassette, just recording our little demos and stuff. And eventually what happened is I got a 16-track, one-inch Tascam machine, and then friends started asking me to record. Like Fatso Jetson did some stuff there. I remember really early on. This would have been around 2000, maybe 2003 or 4, somewhere around there. And what happened was when Leopold recorded the Wreck of Hope, the album, we worked with Alex Newport, and he said, you know, to feel free to ask him any questions about engineering or whatnot. And I did, you know, I would ask him every so often, what's he doing here? What's he doing? And he said, have you ever thought about working in a studio? And I said, no, not really, you know. And he said, well, you know, you ask all the right questions. And that just sort of stuck with me. So I kept doing it just as a hobby on the weekends. You know, my setup was at Downtown Rehearsal. And then eventually the weekend thing just wasn't working because bands were showing up to rehearse a lot earlier for some reason. And so we couldn't get in there and do stuff. It would just, you know, the bleed would get into everything.
Yeah, I was going to say, because there'd be, like, the bands going on and right through the fucking bulkhead.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, and you know, I'd feel bad because here are these people were hoping to get some things, you know, on tape. And so what happened is around, I'd say 2008. Yeah, 2008, I found the building I'm in now. My buddy Anthony, actually, from Total Annihilation Records, was the one that kept kind of pushing me, like, dude, you got to get a real spot, you know? And so I opened that studio in 2008, and it's been, you know, luckily I substitute teach, and that's what's been able to keep paying the rent on that place during this, you know, the pandemic here. But, yeah, it's been, you know, and I've worked with a lot of our friends, you know. Actually, Chris's last recording session was there with Jeff Porterfield gosh, who were the... a bunch of people we know. The guitar player from Bellrays.
Tony
Fate. He was there. Vince was there. So, you know, over the years, initially it was a lot of friends. A lot of the Killsonic people really support the studio also. But then, you know, after a while, you know, the word starts to trickle out. And so now I get the cold calls and everything. But slowly booking up again, actually. I have some bookings in April now. And I just finished recording Fatso Jetson. And All Souls, Tony, who you had on your show, is actually my partner in Eastside Rehearsal Studios. We own a small rehearsal studio business.
Oh, together. Yeah. Also, his wife was on.
Yeah. Yeah, his wife,
right.
Meg. Yeah.
Right. Great yeah. Cats, both of them.
Oh, yeah. Great people.
So let me get this straight. You just asked some fucking questions. That was all your training. All your learning has been by doing?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's been kind of like reading. Tape Op Magazine also was going on.
Ah, great magazine. Joel Hamilton, yeah. One of the editors.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
I got to record with Joel. He's partners with Tony Mamonio at Mamoni from the Perubu.
Oh,
Studio
yeah.
G in Brooklyn.
G.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why I
yeah,
did
so
my
that,
third
that
album.
That magazine actually was a big inspiration, just reading about regular guys learning, you know.
Well, a lot of it is we jam Econo philosophy.
Totally. So, yeah. Use what you got. Use whatever you can, you know. I mean, I did do a a recording seminar in France with Albini for a week back in 2014. That was great. And that guy, to this day, I email or call him, and he always has advice and encouragement, and just a great person to know. So that's the only time I took, like, formal training with Steve over in France.
Okay, let's hear some more Leopold.
Right on. We'll be right back.
My lady, hi, hi, my lady, hi, my lady, hi, hi, my lady in black and black, black and black. Hi, my lady, hi, hi, my lady, hi, my lady, hi, hi, my lady in black and black, black and black. You were about to enter your compound when you saw me in my blue van, my blue van. I did wave my hand I waved, and you saw, but I drove away. I got chickens, my lady, hi, hi, my lady, I got chickens, my lady, hi, hi, my lady, in black and black, black and black. I got chickens, my lady, hi, hi, my lady, I got chickens, my lady, hi, hi, my lady, in black and black, black and black. Your sweet, sexy figure that I can't forget. I am a gentleman. I am a gentleman. I turned around and pulled towards your house. Saw you were not there. Waited for a little bit, but no sign of you. I don't know what has happened to me in that moment as I missed my golden opportunity. My beautiful lady. My beautiful lady. Please forgive me for not stopping. For instance, I thought we could both get into trouble. Now, I realize I am in love with you. I will take care of you my whole life. I cannot forget that unbelievable scene.
He cannot forget that unbelievable scene.
Someone special. And for now, goodbye. My lady, bye bye. My lady, bye. My lady, bye bye. My lady in black and black. Black
he
and
is
black.
Legend.
my lady. Bye, my lady. Bye, bye, my lady. Bye, bye, my lady. Bye, my lady. Bye, my lady. Bye, bye. Goodbye.
Walk for Pedro show last music for this edition. Leopold, Brick Full of Tables, then Flies on You with Frying Tonight, Dead Reverend, Third Eye, Some Days with Cats to Creeps, Veda Hill, Hi My Lady. Veda, she's up in Vancouver, and they made all these songs out of, like, Craigslist. Like, none of the lyrics are from them. They're from these fucking Craigslist things.
That's a great idea.
Tripped out. That shit is.
Vancouver, yeah. Canada, or Vancouver, Washington?
Yeah, it's Canada. You know about that. Because when you're crossing the border from Portland, the city of Portland, and you're going from Oregon to Washington State, it says Vancouver.
Yeah, totally.
And there's a Hooters right there.
Yeah,
must screw with a lot of people. And then, finally, Quebradita, number four.
Quebradita, number four, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That was a funny, like, that was a trendy dance for a while out of Mexico, like, this, where they hug very tightly and move together, like, so it was just a joke name, and it just stuck.
Bailando. Bailando, dancing. Yeah. And there's, I remember there's one kind of trendy thing with the big shoes for a little bit.
Oh, yeah, the boots. Yeah, the pointy boots.
Yeah. Oh, man, I don't know how you could walk, let alone dance in those babies. But
yeah,
it looked cool. It looked very cool.
You know what they extend that with is water hose. They use a water hose and they cut it down the middle.
Yeah.
And then they attach it to the boot. That's how the first guy that did it. That's what he used.
Okay. Hey, we Jeremy Cano, right?
Hey, that's
I'm
right.
I'm into it. I'm fucking way. Some people, you know, I tell people that was not just a slogan.
Yeah. No.
It's a way of life.
Yeah. Totally.
Oh man. You were talking 8-inch, I mean, 8-track, 1-inch? No, 16-track, 1-inch.
Oh, 16-track, 1-inch, yeah.
But Double Nickels on the Dime, Ethan James did that on an Atari 8-track, half-inch.
Oh, yeah, I have one of those, too. Yeah. Yeah.
$1,100 to record that. It's probably the best record I ever played on.
Right on, yeah.
He mixed it. He mixed it one night, Eddie.
Yeah. It's crazy when you read about those crazy sessions like with you back then. The entire records on a weekend, you know, like, wow.
So what about, you said the building you're in now after you left the Prac Pad place.
Yeah.
That's now a loft. That watch.
Yeah, for lofts.
Yeah, okay. Maybe it's better, though, because that was so fucked about the sound coming through. But what did you do? Let me ask you your opinion. Acoustics. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of lucky. If people want to look at the studio, they can go to eddierivas.com or totalannihilationstudios.com. We got lucky in the sense that it just kind of made a rectangular room, and we got lucky that it didn't cause any problems. But it's a nice big tracking room, like 20 by 30 feet, with a smaller ISO room downstairs that's like 10 by 10. And then the control room upstairs. So it's like a mini Abbey Road, I guess you could say. I'm lucky that the room just happened to sound good and didn't need a lot of, you know, didn't need any treatment.
Yeah, because a lot of those parallel walls, you get standing waves and shit.
Yeah.
But that's why a fucking zine like Tape Op really helps, because these cats can hip you to shit like that.
Yeah, especially on the forums, you know, like on the Tape Op message board.
Sure.
You can ask, you know, hey, I'm doing this, how should I deal with it, you know?
Right. And I think that gap between dudes recording and dudes playing is getting smaller and smaller.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I get a lot of clients that'll do, like, let's say their drums at my spot, then do all the rest of their stuff at home or in their practice pad if they can, and then bring it back and have me mix it. I mean, that happens all the time now, you know.
Wow.
Same thing with tape, yeah.
That's interesting. That's interesting. You know, whatever lets people be creative and expressive, I'm into.
Yeah, totally. Completely.
You know, it's an evolving, changing thing. And like when we first started talking today, it's about people.
Yeah, totally.
It's about
people. You know, it's like, I think it's really cool when you know, you can, you know, we're all moving, right? Time's just kind of going by, and you look back and go, wow, I've known this person now 20, 30 years, you know, or I played a gig with that guy, you know, 15 years ago, and we're still in touch, or what, you know, whatever the case, it's, I think that's a great thing, you know?
Yeah. And here's another great thing. You coming on the show, big honor, Eddie. Thanks so much.
Thank you. No,
really,
it's good.
Truly.
I really appreciate it.
And when you get your new things coming out, bring them, please. I want to play.
Right on.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll send you some stuff.
Beautiful.
Thank you, Watt.
Beautiful. People, it's been March 31, 2021, Dish Watt Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.